the Tuesday, March 19th, 2019 meeting of the Kitsap County Planning Commission. We begin today, as we always do, with introductions. We want to start down at the other end of the dais, and we want to welcome our new Planning Commissioner, Mike Eliason. When it comes your turn, maybe you can tell us a few words about yourself. Oh, and turn your microphone on. Yeah, you have to push right. The buttons in front till they turn red. There you go.
There we go. Thank you. Finally, I'm Mike Eliason. I'm proud to join the commission. I recently retired as the longest serving executive of the Board of Realtors. In fact, one of my funniest stories is in my third year of employment there, I found out that the longest executive had been there 10 years, and I thought to myself, there is no way I'm going to last that long. Certainly exceeded that, and like Shelley, I didn't think I was going to get back into land use, but here I am today and joining you as the junior member of the commission. Thank you.
Very good. Shelley?
Shelley Knipe, South Kitsap.
Jim Swenson, South Kitsap.
Tom Nevins, North Kitsap.
Joe Phillips, North Kitsap.
Kim Allen, South Kitsap. And we have a quorum. Do I have a motion to adopt the agenda as presented?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion, adds, or edits? All right. All those in favor, signify by raising your hand. Opposed? And it passes unanimously. Okay. We do not have any minutes this evening, so we will skip agenda item C and move into agenda item D, which is the Kent Open Space application. Catherine Schaffer is our staff on that. Welcome. Is it Schaffer or Schaefer? Okay, I stand corrected. No.
The button, the red button is on here.
And your microphone light is on.
Ooh, there we go. Now it's on.
Can you, okay. Is this better? Okay, yeah. How's this?
A little bit more.
Okay, I think that's good. Thank you, sorry about that. Well, as Kim mentioned, my name is Catherine Schaefer, and I'm a planner with the Department of Community Development, and I'm here today to present a department-approved application for current use open space. And I'd like to start off the presentation by giving everyone a brief overview of the open space program, and then I'll get into details about how this particular application is eligible. Properties in the Kitsap County Open Space Program receive reduced taxes based on sensitive criteria listed in Kitsap County Code 1812, for example, streams and wetlands. In exchange, the properties in the Kitsap County Open Space Program agree to the conditions, which restrict development. And the goal of this program is to keep these sensitive properties in their natural state and not developed, to enhance the quality of life for present and future generations. And with that, I'd like to get into the Kent Open Space application, which is what we have before us today. Edward Kent has applied to transfer 11 of his 16.23 acres currently designated as single family residence to current use open space. The subject property is located off 1198 Northeast Raspberry Ridge Lane, and that's in North Kitsap, Commissioner District Number 1. And we're going to zoom in right here to a regional map. Raspberry Ridge Lane is actually an easement road off of Big Valley Road, which is a county-maintained road, which runs perpendicular to Bond Road. And the property is zoned rural protection which allows for one dwelling unit every 10 acres. And we're going to zoom in a little bit more for two maps. The top map on the southeast corner shows a single-family residence as well as some outbuildings. And I do have a little clearer picture of what's on there right now. But I wanted to just show you the juxtaposition of the aerial and the critical area map. So below is the critical area map. And the pink shaded area and the pink lines represent slopes greater than 15%. And Kitsap County Code Title 12 deems slopes greater than 15% as geologic hazards. Then the green layer as well as the blue plant layer represent wetlands. And then running along the western parcel, the western of the parcel, is a dark blue line. And that is Dogfish Creek. It's a fish-bearing stream. And then if you see along Dogfish Creek, the blue diagonal lines, that represents a FEMA flood zone, and that is a flood zone A. And here's the clearer map. This was actually submitted by the applicant, and you can see Dogfish Creek all the way on the west. And the single-family residence, as well as the driveway and all of the outbuildings, are excluded from the open space designation, so none of them will be included in that. But you can get a really clear picture of what's in and what's out on this particular map. And properties that are eligible for the program must have at least two sensitive characteristics listed in Kitsap County Code 1812. And this application was found to have three high priority resources, no medium, and one low. So the fish rearing habitat, we saw Dogfish Creek. We also saw wetlands on the critical area map. And this property is also located in a critical aquifer recharge area, category one. And then the steep slopes were denoted by the pink shaded area on the critical area map. And here are two pictures from the staff site visit. Every time there is an open space application, the staff must go visit the site as part of the application. Those are two pictures that I took while I was on site. So if approved, the application will be eligible for a 50% reduction in the land value, which results in about a decrease of $496 a year. And at this time, I'd be happy to address any questions that you have.
Other questions? First, is it going to remain one tax parcel?
So as far as
the,
so our process is we work with the assessor. So the applicants actually apply with us, and then once we get all of the documents from the hearings, we actually hand it over to the assessor for their, what I like to call their tax magic. They keep it in one parcel number.
One parcel.
Yes.
Just kind of curious if they did like meets and bounds description, how do you delineate between the two properties, for example, since they're keeping one part residential? Which essentially is free and clear, and the other one's going to have what you might call encumbrances, but these restrictions listed 1 through 11, maybe not to this specific parcel, but how do you have code enforcement activity to determine, if you're getting any activity mm-hmm. close to the line?
So if we had it here, let me go ahead. And so here's the line.
Right.
So as far as code enforcement, we would use this as well. And there's also conditions on here as if they violate any of the conditions that they can be removed from the open space designation and they would have to pay back taxes as well, potentially.
Okay.
So.
Great, thank you.
Other questions?
Just a note, you might want to take a look at the slide, I think it's slide number 2 or 3, which is shows it's the one before that. There you go. That arrow needs to be moved north a fair amount.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the arrow is, yeah, okay. Maybe I got the little dips wrong here.
Yeah, wrong bank.
Yeah, keep it up a little bit higher. Bank. Yeah.
Other questions for the commission? I have a question. Can you go back to the boundary of the open space?
Yeah.
On the right-hand side of the slide, there's sort of a it's an interesting shape that doesn't line up with the parcel boundaries. Is there a particular reason why the line goes there, I guess?
I don't understand your question.
Okay. There. Well, there's.
Oh. Okay. I think I understand
the
what you're saying
of the
now.
Turtle.
Yeah. So it, the line goes right there because it's got to exclude. I don't have a pointer. It's got to exclude the easement right there, so we can't include the easement in there. So that's why it kind of juts out there. So, but all the activities are happening for the single family residents are happening outside of that line. But that is why that line is drawn like that, because you got to take out for that easement okay. or the driveway. Yeah.
Okay. Any further questions? Okay. What is our next step, Catherine? Do you need a motion? To recommend approval?
Yeah, it's a public hearing. And I thought my applicant would be here. He sent me an email at 4:30, but he may have gotten caught up in that traffic.
Okay. Well, with that, I will open the public hearing on the Kent Open Space application. Is there anyone signed up?
No.
Is there anyone here who wishes to be heard? Asking twice. With that, I will close the public hearing on the Kent Open Space hearing and entertain a motion. Commissioner?
Yes, I would move that the Planning Commission recommend approval of the application before us.
Second.
Any discussion?
Just quick comments. Fantastic program. So I'm pleased the applicants decided to apply.
Very good. All right. With that, all those in favor of the motion signify by raising your hand. All those opposed? And it passes unanimously. All right. Moving on to, let's see. Do I need to sign findings? Okay. Okay. Our next step then would be a motion to approve the findings of fact. We have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? All right. All those in favor of approving the findings of fact signify by raising your hand. Opposed? And it passes unanimously. Thank you. With that, we will move on to agenda item E, which is a briefing on Interim Ordinance 366-2019, Group Residential Facilities Secured High Risk. We have Liz Williams here to give us that presentation.
Thank you. For the record, Liz Williams with the Department of Community Development. So I'm here tonight, as Ms. Allen mentioned, to give the Planning Commission a brief briefing on interim regulations that the Board of County Commissioners adopted on February 6th. The presentation will cover what a group residential facility secured high risk is. An overview of the ordinance and where proposed facilities may be allowed in unincorporated Kitsap County, and a summary of the process moving forward and opportunities for the public to participate and stay informed. So a group residential facility secured high risk houses one or more civilly committed sexually violent predators. These individuals have completed their criminal sentences and have petitioned Superior Court to be conditionally released from a state-operated facility to a community-based facility to receive ongoing treatment and supervision. There is a long history that has led to the use of community-based facilities, which is briefly outlined on the slide above. In short, state law requires cities and counties to allow these facilities, but does not regulate their placement in local communities. The interim ordinance defines these facilities and limits the number of individuals that can occupy them to no greater than four. The ordinance also identifies specific neighborhood compatibility and safety requirements, such as automatic sprinkler systems and backup power in case of power outages, and requires facilities to be placed away from risk potential facilities and no closer than 880 feet from schools and daycare facilities. The ordinance also requires Kitsap County to mail notification to landowners within a half mile of a proposed facility. It also requires Kitsap County to hold a neighborhood meeting prior to processing a permit application, and also to hold a public hearing during the permit review process. The ordinance currently allows this use to be proposed within commercial and industrial zones listed on the slide above. These zones are in urban areas and provide a higher level of service, such as access to police, fire, and emergency management services. So moving forward, the board has 6 months under state law to adopt a final ordinance unless a work plan is approved. In addition, whenever an interim regulation or ordinance is adopted, the board must hold a public hearing within 60 days. The board is scheduled to hold a public hearing on March 25th at 5:30 in the commissioner chambers here in this room. The feedback received at that hearing will help shape the final draft ordinance for the board, planning commission, and public consideration moving forward. In attachment 4 of the executive summary that was included in your packet, it includes a more detailed project schedule. The Planning Commission is tentatively scheduled to hold a work study on April 16th regarding the final draft ordinance, and then a public hearing on May 7th, and deliberations and tentative recommendation on May 21st. If a recommendation is not provided on May 21st, the department has also tentatively scheduled time on June 4th for adoption of finding of facts. And if necessary, the Planning Commission could also make their recommendation at that meeting. So in order to stay informed, as I mentioned, the interim ordinance is really a starting point in the conversation that will shape a final ordinance moving forward. And so the public is really encouraged to stay involved and participate throughout the process. They can do so by visiting our code update website, which is listed up on the screen. It provides information on the current status of the project and kind of next steps. They can also subscribe to the county's Gov Delivery electronic notification system by signing up for the Kitsap County Code Update announcement list. Or they can contact the Department of Community Development directly with any questions that they may have. We are currently accepting public comment on the interim ordinance that was adopted by the board. That public comment period is scheduled to close on March 25th at midnight, and then we'll reopen again in April when the final draft ordinance is available for public consideration. So I'm happy to answer any initial questions. We did include in your packet a copy of the interim ordinance that was adopted, a frequently asked questions sheet, which provides a little more context about the interim regulations, and I'd be happy to answer any more questions you have at this time.
Are there questions from Ms. Williams? Commissioner Knight?
So my understanding from reading in the news was this came to life because of an existing facility?
That is correct, yes.
And what happens to existing facilities that aren't in the right place?
So currently the facility or the department has issued a notice of violation to the facility in outside of Poulsbo, so it's on Viking Way. That process is ongoing and is a separate action outside of this interim ordinance.
How is the state involved in these homes, or is it a contractor?
The state has contracted with a service provider for this particular facility.
Other questions?
Are the classifications similar in other jurisdictions from 1 to 4 per residence?
1 to 4 in terms of the occupants?
Correct.
From my review of other jurisdictions, there has not been a specific limitation on the number of occupants.
Yeah, and I've noticed in neighboring counties, too, there's a similar debate about
Correct.
Local ordinances.
Yes, yeah. This is definitely something that is being discussed amongst various jurisdictions.
Thank you.
Would this type of facility rise to become an essential public facility?
So essential public facilities, there are other types of secured facilities known as secure community transitional facilities, which are considered essential public services, in addition to group homes. And so at this time, our correspondence and understanding of what this is regulating, it is not an essential public service. And even if it was, state law does require that local counties do not preclude the siting of these, and so an ordinance, this ordinance does allow these facilities within our jurisdiction.
Commissioner.
The zoning designations, did the staff consider any other zones other than the ones that are presented?
So we did take a look at neighboring jurisdictions that do have similar ordinances, and that was the basis for recommending these initial zones. It is possible during the development of the final draft ordinance as that moves forward to consider other zones or restrict it even further than what is currently allowed.
Great, thank you.
Well, I have a question. Yes. Apparently, there's a, judging from the staff report, there's a permit review process that includes a public hearing before the hearing examiner. Mm-hmm. Is that a conditional use permit required?
Correct, yes. This use does require a conditional use permit.
Okay, so each individual siting would allow an additional opportunity for public comment and for...
The conditional use permit would be for the facility itself at the property, so it wouldn't have anything to do with individual placements. It would just be an establishment of that land use.
Yeah, that's what I meant. The siting of that facility on a particular parcel.
Correct.
Would that generate a conditional use permit hearing at which the public could be heard on
correct.
That land use.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
So no action is required of us on this yet.
This was just a heads up to the commission. We are under a quite tight timeline to meet that 6-month deadline. So we will do as much as we can to prepare ahead of time and provide materials for your review. And feel free to ask questions and get those to the clerk if there are questions ahead of the meeting.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, with that, we will move on to item F, which is deliberations and recommendation on the wireless communication facility code update. Darren Gurney is the staff, lead staff on that. And we'll wait for just a second.
Trying new technology here, with no puns intended on that one. So. Good evening, planning commissioners. For the record, Darren Gurney, Kitsap County Department of Community Development, and project lead for the wireless communications code update. Before you tonight is a code that has gone through a lengthy process of development with multiple departments, prosecutor's office, public works, IS department, and DCD. Our preliminary draft was provided for an initial feedback prior to planning commission review. We received that feedback, provided some changes to the draft, then provided the Planning Commission with a draft for their review. Went through multiple work study sessions, and a total of 3, that went through a brief overview of different types of facilities, the code, and our preliminary feedback. Finally, we had our hearing on February 19th, extended our public comment period to the 26th, brings you to 25 comments, which you received in your matrix as attachment C4. The department provided responses to those comments, and you will see in the comment matrix where we have suggested changes. Those suggested changes are consistent with the additional attachment of the entire code to provide those changes in context relative to the original proposal. For tonight, with deliberations, we are asking that we open a main motion to accept the attachment C5 document with having the suggested changes included. And we can go through the feedback matrix as part of the discussion on that motion. And if there are specific areas in the comment matrix you wish to address, I will have that available on the screen, along with the document that we can change for the findings of fact in the future. So with that, did we have any questions at this time?
Commissioner Hibbins.
Yes. Are we considering the 313 draft? Is that the one that we're looking at?
It was attachment C5, which is the it's most recent one.
313.
The 313.
Okay.
Yes.
Additional questions?
Well, yes, I just noticed something on page 9 of the 313 at line 25 and 26. If you can scroll down to that, if that's the 13 draft up there.
So what is the section?
Well, what I'm seeing is that it says that it refers to 104.290, and it says that no appeal is available. But when I read that same code,
so appeals.
It looks to me like it is available. So there's a little mismatch there.
Section M.
I don't have.
Yes, I have section M pulled up on the screen for you here. I can increase the size.
Yeah, that's it. It says not to be appealed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I understand that's the wish of because of the shot clock problem. But
if I may, this probably is getting into the discussion portion after the motion.
You're right.
I just want to be clear on the record for that.
All right.
I'll entertain a motion to adopt the findings of fact.
I move to approve.
Thank you.
The ordinance as set forth in attachment C5.
Yes.
Is there a second?
I'll second that discussion.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Now we move to the discussion. Forgive my lapse here in my parliamentary procedure. All right, so I think Commissioner Nevins had a question.
Okay. My apologies, Commissioner. It was just part of procedure, so.
All right. Okay, so I'm just calling attention to this, what seems to be an internally inconsistent problem. And, you know, I would like to hear what the Department of Community Development feels that 2104-290 says to them. Because when I read it, it sounded like an appeal is possible.
That is correct. An appeal is possible through Title 21. This would be presiding over that. So this would be something that allows you to make the code such that you would not be able to appeal through from an ACUP.
Is that not addressed in the applicability section, the change? For 2104-020 that exempts this chapter?
Correct.
So maybe,
that was the intention.
So maybe just don't reference section 2104.
I think that's probably a good solution.
Put a period after hearing examiner.
Commissioner.
Darren, is this set up so that appeals are not possible solely under the wireless communication provisions, but are in all other types of
that is
decisions?
Correct. That is correct. And
why are we doing that?
So there was a reference to the shot clock or the time in review that is allowed per the FCC standards. And there's a possibility that the appeals are considered as part of that shot clock, which would likely push us beyond the 90-day review period for some of the permit types. We are allowed under the revised code of Washington to make this change to not allow for an appeal. We felt that it was important to still provide the ability for public comment through an ACUP, administrative conditional use permit. So we felt it was important to allow for public comment, and that's why we chose to do it this way. The other option was to reduce the permit requirement to permitted outright or a letter of exemption.
Other questions? Commissioner Eliason.
Yeah, I hope you'll pardon me since I missed the previous meeting, although I did my best to read all the testimony. And in fact, I would like to apologize to Tom Nevins and others who had to get my testimony over the years, because the volume of materials you guys had to review must have been astronomical. But that's the process we have, and I appreciate getting all reviewing all the testimony that was provided by the carriers and providers and citizens. And in my mind, I tried to break up the testimony into the 5G safety issues, EMF, radiation access in the service areas, and how we provide that regulatory means. And at the same time, how do we provide a level playing field for the service providers to be able to economically provide the service. I wanted to find out, though, first I'll compliment you, because I think the staff did a fantastic job, like I told you earlier, with providing the information and then providing the matrix that identified and summarized the issues and then the department's response to each one of those. So that was very helpful as I went through the draft documents. But I wanted to find out, was that a timeline issue because of the FCC ruling? Were there any stakeholder meetings with anybody? And if not, why not?
We did not hold stakeholder meetings per se. We developed the code through a consultant, and then that went through an internal review through multiple departments. We then put up the draft for preliminary feedback to the industry stakeholders to get that feedback prior to the Planning Commission process.
Okay, fantastic. And then follow up to that, reading the comments from Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile, since they've provided that written testimony and you have incorporated some of the recommendations in the new draft, have you gotten any, I don't know if it's appropriate to ask, have you gotten any feedback from them if they're satisfied with the changes you're proposing?
The feedback that we get to consider in this process is that which is received during public comment period.
Right.
So all feedback has been provided to the Planning Commission that we have received.
Okay. So, for example, like I noticed, one of the providers recommended bundling of permits, and that's a new addition to it.
That was a suggestion both in the preliminary feedback as well as for the draft before the Planning Commission as well.
Okay.
You were referring to the batching?
Yes.
And severability of the batching?
Right.
Yes.
Okay, I'll try to finish quickly. How about, could you explain to me any, and I understand the shotgun, but there was some concern about the permitting being 6 months and then 6 months versus, you know, 2 years and 4 years.
Yes. So I should mention that the comments received were reviewed by a group, mainly that internal group that helped to develop the code. We reviewed those comments as a group as well. The conditional use permit process typically has a four-year expiration date. Building permits and certain wireless facilities, they had a six-month expiration date. So we had this range to work with. And the bundling of a permit includes building permit, right-of-way permits, and the conditional use permit, if that's the type it is, for land use. So we did this expiration date with an extension with those items in mind.
Okay. Two last things. One is the application request, and I understand the county needs a process to make sure that it's, you know, whether it's their power attorney or the actual applicant applying, to ensure it is the owner that wants to go through the process, and there was concern by some of the providers about their timeline and their process of being able to submit a letter. I don't think a letter would be adequate enough, but is there some happy medium, or is there any other alternative between what's in the draft document and what they suggested, which was an owner signature letter?
Ask a follow-up so that you can answer both questions
yes.
at once? I had the same question, and you know, to the extent that, not that I could find that any other land use requires a submittal of a commercial lease into the public record. I think that the conditional use permits usually call for a letter of authorization or proof of authorization is how it's worded on the application for a conditional use permit. And I wondered why it would be different for this particular use.
Yes. So I may ask Jeff Smith here to join me. But from what I understand, that was primarily due to the fact that you are dealing with commercial facilities in a rural residential setting. That is a possibility. And in the history of how we've dealt with wireless communication facilities in the past, we have requested the lease agreements. Usually they are redacting information from that lease agreement that is proprietary information. That's about the extent of what I know. I'm going to let Jeff continue on that if there's anything else.
Yes, Darren's correct. That we've been, with our wireless code that's been in place since around 1996, we've been requiring a lease agreement for a wireless communication facilities. And it's to provide authorization and proof that the property owner knows what's going on with the proposal. And it's not just limited to wireless communication facilities. We do have language in our off-street parking standards for joint use facilities and or off-site employee parking, where we do require deeds, lease agreements, or a letter of authorization, which provides a formal notice or to anybody out there that they have legal right to do those activities on that property. And one thing that's been important with the lease agreement is it actually identifies that use on that specific spot on that property. Instead of encumbering the whole piece of property, and it's clear that they, where the proposal is located.
Could an applicant or provider use a limited power of attorney and satisfy the code?
I guess it, yes. There's a possibility for initially they could do that.
Yeah.
Through like a water purveyors or other
yeah,
local governments.
Yeah, similar to like delineation or having right of way agreements. You know.
Yeah. And also we need to have proof of easement, too, as far as access in some cases.
Well, as long as there's an exhibit attached that delineates the lease space in relation to the parcel.
Yes.
And with an owner authorization, I mean, would that give you the information you're looking for?
Initially, yes. But yeah, we try to have a legal authorization that use can go on that property. It's like if there's a subdivision that's being considered for the hearing examiner, we'd want to make sure that that all that the fee simple properties encumbered by or included in that application that's under control of that landlord or the applicant.
Great, thank you. And then last item is the screening. Other than stealth technology, and the providers had some other recommendations. And I'm wondering if one of the reasons not to approve some of the other suggestions would be the migratory. I'm a bird lover, sorry, among other things.
Okay, just to clarify, you were asking about screening requirements related to...
Yeah, because they wanted to expand it beyond the stealth technology. And
so
you had different sections, too, where you identified some of the natural barriers and different things that could be used. But according to them, it seemed a little bit more restrictive, and they wanted to add some things to it.
So... that would specifically be in reference to the topic that considers guy wire towers that he was referring to with the migratory birds. In terms of screening requirements, that didn't necessarily address screening. That was primarily to mitigate bird strikes. They typically would make the tower and the guy wires more visible so the birds would avoid it, which we considered inconsistent with our comprehensive plan policies. And before, did that answer
yes,
your question?
Did.
Okay. Before we go further, was there a requested change and a motion for the item M where you were talking about taking off that?
Do you have a motion to remove item M?
Do you still have it up there?
Mm-hmm. It would be, if I remember, you said to just put a period after.
I would even take it to, it may not be appealed.
So just may not be appealed.
Right. I'm not ready to make that motion, but one of the things that has bothered me and bothered probably DCD and probably bothered lots of folks in the state is the fact that we are boxed in on this shot clock as a mechanism that severely limits the rights of the citizens as we go forward. I mean, it's very bothersome, and I don't really have a solution. We can eliminate that sentence and just stay silent on it, and that almost seems worse to me than leaving it in there. Just, it bothers me every which way it goes, but I see no choices that are available.
Would perhaps referencing the FCC rules that are boxing us in attached to that so that people understand that this was not an arbitrary decision made?
I think that would be something for the findings if you were, instead of putting it in code necessarily. Yes, that is a possibility.
All right, so if we amended the findings to remove the language that you've highlighted up there, Darren, with a request to add some language about these cannot be appealed because it's impossible to meet the FCC timelines and incorporate an appeal. Something more elegant than that.
I have made a note.
Darren, have you been monitoring what other jurisdictions in the Puget Sound region are doing and how they're responding to this ramrod excellent lobbying job that's been done by the industry? I noticed in a newspaper article there's a whole list of Puget Sound cities and King County that have filed, gone to court that are not playing ball. Have other jurisdictions adopted this thing where we're going to eliminate appeals because we're so worried about the shot clock?
In my research, I haven't found that specific piece. To my knowledge, I believe there's only one jurisdiction that has adopted, one or two that I've adopted since the September 26th ruling. But I'm not really sure. I don't know. I should just say I don't know because most of them have been looking at updating the codes, but not many of them have been adopted since that ruling.
And I can actually speak to that. As I've disclosed in the past, I am a representative for the wireless industry. I do attend meetings such as this in other jurisdictions. I have walled myself off from the wireless industry in terms of the specifics of this code just to make sure that I could decide fairly based on the interests of our community. As I did in the past as a hearing examiner for this county. But I do have knowledge that a number of cities and counties throughout the state have adopted interim ordinances that are very similar to this. Some are now working on their permanent ordinances, but a number who are represented by one particular law firm, Ogden Murphy Wallace, they have been passing codes on an interim basis that are similar to this. And also typically exclude the appeals for that very reason, because it's not possible to take a matter to the hearing examiner in 60 or 90 days and have that conclude with all of the time frames and notice requirements that's built into that process. Other questions?
I had a question on the letters of exemption. I've got a written copy and an electronic copy, and my notes are on the written one. Under section 17530030, permitting.
Commissioner, could you move your microphone a little closer? Thank you.
Section 17530030, permitting, subsection C. If a portion of a facility is just being replaced in the same size, it gets a letter of exemption. And it doesn't have to comply with the development, certain development standards, one of which is noise. And I wondered why that was so. I mean, you could put a similar looking piece of equipment that's much noisier. I don't know whether that would happen or not, but I was just curious as to why it wouldn't have to comply with the noise standards. So at the end of C, it says...
Let me see. So let me pull up the general, so people know what they're referring to here. Let me make a note of that and ask. So I do not have an answer for that specific question right now.
I could understand why it wouldn't have to comply with the height or the visual, because it's going to be substantially the same, but noise seems like it could change.
Right, and those were going to be for equipment that was identical or smaller in nature. Right.
So for clarification, you're talking like harmonics, like for a radio equipment up on antennas or something to that effect? Or are you talking about like generators or ground equipment?
Right. I'm just curious as to why noise was one that you would assume would stay the same.
There are times where the equipment changes based on what they need to implement at the base of the tower. There, as far as putting in generators, sometimes it might be larger generators. I don't know.
But would this letter of exemption essentially exempt it from the noise ordinance? Because if you go to the development standards, it just says shall comply with the noise ordinance.
I don't think it exempt it from the noise.
Because it says that it shall comply with the development standards except for sections A, B, and D.
I think that noise would still be applicable and be subject to review.
I think an argument could be made that it's not through the letter of exemption, with that exception.
Okay.
When you read section D.
Is the letter of exemption from the wireless code or from the noise ordinance?
Well, it refers to the development standards, section D, that just says comply with the noise ordinance.
Yeah, I see the problem.
Okay.
Thank you, Jeff. So part of that response, that was in response to one of the stakeholder comments that the general development standards should not apply to those items that required that letter of exemption.
But I do
understand and see what you are referring to. So that is something that could be addressed.
Maybe the language, the general language and letter of exemption can address that, the development standards except for noise.
Right.
When you talked earlier on the, on what the letter of exemption is.
So the letter of exemption is primarily identifying that you have a land use that is going to occur, but we're not requiring you to get a permit for land use. It does not exempt you from building permits or right-of-way permits necessarily. But it's a notifier for the department to start coordinating this permit effort and make sure that we are on time with our review. But seeing as your comment, we would not be opposed to changing the language on this.
Well, even in this section, if you could just say that applications for a letter of exemption are subject to the noise ordinance, you know, something to that effect, just to call that out. That
well, you could remove the D. You could remove the and D on mm-hmm. this. I would need a motion, though. To...
I would move that section 17530030. Capital C, 1, the last sentence is amended to the last clause is except for subsections A and B, as in boy, period. I think it creates a circular problem the way it's written.
That was section 2, subsection 2.
C, capital C, subsection 1.
Yeah, actually, the numbering is off here.
I'm looking at the wrong version.
Yes, it's the second clause. So line 10, paragraph starting on line 10. There we go. Page 5, line 10 is the start of the paragraph, continuing on to page 6 on that first paragraph.
Oh, okay.
Line
so
3.
Section 2.
Yes. Still dealing with the difficulties of formatting in Microsoft Word.
All right, so there's a motion on the floor that's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor of adopting this motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And raise your hand, because I'm still getting used to that. Any opposed? Any abstentions?
Okay. And we still, I don't know if you had meant to make a motion for the appeals piece or not. I just don't want to lose that.
Right.
That discussion.
Did you look at all at any of the model ordinances in developing this?
We did review those during the development, yes.
Do you recall what they had for appeals?
I would have to look at it directly to make sure I stated it correctly. I'm not sure if they reduced the permit requirement or if it was provided as an option in the code. As one of two ways.
I have the same concerns about not having a process, and yet there are a number of permits that can't be appealed, a lot of things that can't be appealed. Building permits generally can't be appealed. So, you know, it's kind of a balancing act here. Which way we go?
Well, in the event that we need more time on this, do we want to note that as some additional information that Commissioner Knight would like? All right, are there other questions? I have a few comments here. For let's see, I get, this is in 17530. I think it's 050. There's so many sections in these. It's on page 10 of 26. It's the section dealing with the balloon testing.
It's going to be a conditional use permit.
So that would be
it's part of the visual.
1B, visual appearance, 1B.
Okay. And it's going to be under 060.
Go back there. We're on page 10 of 26 for this one.
Okay.
There we go. This would be under the visual impact analysis.
Okay, so that was the page numbering on the document is different than the one in the bottom left-hand corner.
Okay.
So visual impact analysis, yes.
Okay, and I guess I have a question about why we're going to require someone to loft a balloon with a crane. What this requires the applicant to do is to know 10 days in advance to provide notice that there's going to be a clear windless day with no rain to be able to get a crane and loft a balloon at the same height as the tower. And I think for most of the year, that would be impossible. So I'm wondering, I know that photo simulations, give a good idea of what something's going to look like, especially if you require a lot of them, from many different viewpoints and vantage points. I'm wondering, I guess I'm concerned about the shot clock here, that having a requirement that the applicant, be able to successfully loft a balloon for a day could start the shot clock, especially if for most of the year they can't do that. I see Mr. Smith's come back.
Jeff Smith.
The purpose for the balloon test is a courtesy notice to the surrounding property owners. As far as notifying them 400 feet around the balloon, they have an opportunity to review and comment before the application is submitted to the county. I understand your concern about the balloon test, but we seem to make do. I've only experienced maybe about two or three times where the balloon test didn't work because of the wind or the rain, but if it's windy, you still can do it as long as you're still in an opening because when you have a balloon tethered, it's going like this, and you can catch it at the right height as long as it's the right height of the line, the tow line.
Yeah.
But cranes are something we used to do more often, but balloons seem to be the best and the most inexpensive way of doing it. But I understand your concern.
I want to make sure that what we're putting in as requirements are practical and they have, a concomitant benefit.
I've seen numerous balloon tests through this application of the current code, and we are able to get it done as far as doing a photo simulation or the applicant's proposal.
Commissioner Nivens.
Yes, just chipping in. Given the restrictions that we have on the community to make an appeal, I think everything that we can do to demonstrate what is actually going to go in their neighborhood would be at least somewhat helpful. I'm in favor of keeping the requirements of showing folks what this is going to look like.
Well, I think that the requirement for the balloon test is just for towers, and you still can appeal those. They're not subject to that short shot clock. Only the small wireless facilities in the right-of-way are.
The appeal section refers to the exemptions in the administrative CUPs.
Right, not the full CUPs that a tower would be required to undergo before a hearing examiner.
But kind of taking note of what you're alluding to, wouldn't a picture of the area affected being photoshopped with the effect and being able to be sent to any interested party be more effective of getting out what's going to happen?
From my experience with conditional use permits is that the neighbors like to see empirical data as far as looking at what's going to be going up and comparing it with what the background's going to be, what are the visual impacts on the adjacent surrounding neighborhood. And one of the things we look at is we look at the impacts to the foreground, middle ground, and background. In some cases, a balloon test will give you the information you need to look at what's going on in the background.
Oh, I'm not saying take away the balloon test. I'm saying perhaps add into the toolbox.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
A photoshopped picture of the area that you're proposing to show what it would actually look like.
Yeah, we do include that with the application. It's part of the public record for a conditional use permit. And now that things are going more electronic, people have more access to that as far as the land use files. And
okay. Additional comments? Yes.
So the code language you propose says the visual impact analysis shall include a visual demonstration such as. So that's one example, and as you mentioned, there's only been a few times during the course of the year of your testing where it's been a problem. But are there alternative methods? You kind of referenced that, said this is the least expensive or most economical, but are there other methods of being able, other than like the photos, where you could have some type of visual?
Yeah, there are situations like if they're using it, they're going to be locating into like a water reservoir, or they're going to be being located against another wireless communication tower. We can use that as a visual reference as far as the height. Sometimes they want to put it in at the same height but a different tower, and we don't have to erect a balloon or a crane or anything like that. We just use that as a reference point for photo simulation.
So if I understand your concern, Commissioner Allen, is that it's the 10 days notice prior, not so much the test, right?
Right. You have to identify a date certain that you're going to loft the balloon and then provide public notice, you know, rent the equipment and go, basically. And so that's my concern, is that it becomes infeasible.
Is that done under the current wireless code?
Yes, it is. The carrier organizes that. And I'm not sure if that would trigger the shot clock at that point, because it's just the courtesy notice at that time. And there's no permit submitted to the county at that point. It's part of the formulation of the application and doing an evaluation of the site that would be submitted to the county.
Prior to the filing of the
application. It'd be prior to filing, yes.
So we might be able to adjust the dates or the methods, as you mentioned, without interfering with what Commissioner Nevins referenced, was to make sure you have, you know, open continuous participation, especially from neighbors within, what do you say, 600 feet? 800? Okay.
Yeah, 800 feet.
Right now, it's 400 feet in current code, but we can increase that.
Well, we're going a half a mile on the sighting of those, I forgot the term, but the presentation we got earlier. I'm not suggesting we go half a mile, but notify neighbors. Actually, let me ask that real quick. When you determine whether you're going to notify neighbors within 400 feet, 800 feet, obviously there's more cost of postage and that type of thing, but how much more administrative work do you put in if you were to enlarge your radius?
It's really pretty easy. What we do is with our computer system, GIS system, we can easily draw a polygon around where the site is and then create a list of people or property owners that can be notified.
Okay. Great to know. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Just one clarification on this. There was a mention that it was something that was done prior to the permit being submitted. Technically, a permit can be submitted incomplete, and that will start the clock. So in theory, you could possibly have a permit submitted and then a request for that information. And based on the way the code is designed right now, it would be a 30-day response window with a possibility of an extension. So there are some timing factors in there that if the balloon test is not done early, it may not make it easy for the applicant to get it done. Just wanted to be clear on that part.
Right. So,
and to increase the radius does increase the cost of postage for each parcel.
Right. We'd have to weigh that against, obviously, the value to making sure, you know, what's appropriate. As I mentioned, for the siting of different uses in residential, and now these would be limited to mainly commercial zones. How do we determine whether something should be in 400-foot radius, 800 versus half a mile in that particular case? So,
Dave Ward, for the record, you mentioned the previous presentation with the siting of those facilities. The reason that one specifically is a half mile, which is normally much larger than what we normally would notify, is that we were trying to match the notification radius that the Sheriff's Department already uses for placement of those kinds of
for those kinds of placements. It's a policy decision.
Right.
Correct.
It is.
Well, we'll move on from that, I guess. I do have a 17530040H2, a technical correction, letters of exemption. It says once a complete application has been filed, the shot clock starts running. The shot clock is triggered when the initial application is filed.
May I make a suggestion that we indicate the page that
page
we're working
8
on?
Of 26, and it's 17530040H2.
I believe it's...
And it's accurate for the ACUP and the CUP. You say once an initial application has been filed, but under letters of exemption, it says once a complete application has been filed.
I see what you are saying. So this is line 21 on page 8.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's a technical correction.
Right. We would still need a motion to change that to initial.
Could you repeat your entertaining motion to...
Yeah, I will. I'd move to change the word complete to initial to align this with the federal shot clock requirements.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, we have moved and seconded. Any further discussion?
On this and many motions, I will reluctantly probably agree because of the forces that are pushing us in this direction. But I resent the fact that I have to do it.
All right. All those supporting the motion signify by raising your hand. Opposed? Passes unanimously. Okay.
We're staying in that section. There's that, and technical issues on section N. There, it appears that a word's left out. Revoked permit. The county may revoke permit 17600 pursuant to. That's just a typo.
Is that what you're referring to?
Section N on page. Page 9.
Line 27.
Which is up on the screen here.
Yeah, there you go.
Did we have a motion?
Commissioner Knipe, is there a technical correction?
We would need a motion.
I move to amend section 17530.030N, as in Nancy, to include the words pursuant to between permit and the code number.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? All those supporting the motion signify by raising your hand. Opposed? And it passes unanimously. I do have a kind of an overarching policy concern, sort of an internal inconsistency. On page 21 of 26, this is the definition section, but there's a definition for minimum functional height. And I saw there are requirements in the code that the height of a facility be no more than the minimum functional height, which is the minimum height at which a facility can perform its intended function. In other parts of the code, there is a policy expression that co-location is desired. So these two are kind of internally inconsistent. If you can only build a tower that is the minimum necessary for you to deploy, then where does the co-location space come in? You'd want to add that height in if you want to encourage co-location, I would think. And I just wondered what the staff thinking was on that.
Right. So initially, the minimum functional height was part of the propagation study that would justify the height of a facility. And initially, that was part of the ACUP process as well, co-locations for that propagation study. We modified or suggested a change to that to where it would only apply to towers over 60 feet tall that did not employ stealth technology, such as natural feature or an architectural feature. So we're talking about lattice towers and monopoles that are taller than 60 feet. And it still allows for the construction of the facility over 40 feet tall than the height of the trees, no more than 200 feet total. And the minimum functional height was the lesser of any of those three. So the co-location piece, if it's not a substantial change, then that was considered as part of the tower. Are you talking about extending the height of the tower?
No, I'm talking about the initial application for the tower, and what a number of jurisdictions will do is to say that you can have the height that you need plus the amount of one or two co-locators so that the facility is built for co-location. You're building a monopole that automatically has space built in above the first provider's antennas.
Right.
So here, if we want to encourage co-location so we don't have more taller towers, you know, then adding co-location space as a component of that minimum functional height for one or two co-locators, because you have to have the height of the antennas plus the separation between carriers, would seem to be a policy that would encourage fewer tall towers and make the better use of the space.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, but part of designing the minimum functional height would be addressing the fact that you could use co-location, and that's part of the function. But
If you're going to design a tower for, let's say, three carriers to co-locate with 10 feet separation between antenna arrays, then maybe we could do it that way, as far as that's the minimum height. And can be able to be over the trees.
Okay, so I'm looking at the definition, though, of minimum functional height, and my motion would be to add the word in the first sentence after it would read, minimum functional height means the shortest height at which a proposed wireless communications facility can perform its intended function, plus additional space that would be available for co-location. I don't want to see any more monopoles than I have to. And, you know, so if you built in some more space for other carriers,
Or to simplify the language, we could just say including co-location as part of the
because co-location is not part of the performance of its intended function for the applicant.
But it's, if it's designed that way, you could go either way in the language.
Well, I would say that if you look at the definition of communication facility, depending on how they're proposing that facility should be built, that, you know, it does not say one antenna, one tower. It's facility, so, and we do state in there that including antennas and alterations. So there's multiple.
Sure, but if you can only build to the minimum functional height as a development standard.
For that facility. So if right. if they want to build, you know, to include four antennas.
I think that this would restrict that, would restrict adding, building in co-location space to an existing facility. If a provider needs their antennas at 65 feet and the county wants to encourage co-location, then you would want to allow a tower height of up to 85 feet.
I agree with you. I think that especially with code language, it's important to write it so that, you know, it's not vague, it's open to interpretation, with the idea that it's other third parties that are getting this and not the people who are in the room today, you know, whether it's staff or the provider. Did you make a motion to that effect, or just did you speak in general?
I would move to rework the language in 17.110.484 minimum functional height to include height intended for future co-location.
I'll second.
Additional discussion?
Commissioner Nevin? I am looking at this, and I'm assuming that there's some competition among the carriers, and I'm assuming there might be some advantage to cooperating from time to time. But I also see this modification as being one where any provider will say, well, I intend to have co-location. I can go up another 20 feet or so. I'll get better coverage. Does that problem resonate with anyone else?
Well, I'm not sure if you have this language in here, but most of the macro codes require the provider to allow co-location. Yeah, require the applicant, once they build the facility, to allow co-location on that facility. You can impose that as a condition of approval, or it can be a code requirement that the applicant submit a letter or have some written documentation that they will agree to allow co-location on their tower.
Here's what I'm a little unclear on is if a tower is being built and part of its function is to provide co-location, why that is not part of the intended function. And why that specific function would need to be called out.
Well, the question I have with that is that the intended function of a tower from the applicant's perspective is to put its antennas at the height needed to deliver the service that its customers want. Part of the applicant's the applicant doesn't view its intended function as hosting co-locators. That's something that would be part of the intended function that the county would view that way, but I just think the language is a little unclear.
So would it not be sufficient then to say its intended function for communications and co-location, rather than having something that's just kind of an above and beyond tacked onto it?
Yeah, I think that would do it.
That would be simple language.
Yes. So I would move at the end of the first sentence to add a comma, and including communication and co-location.
As communication and co-location?
Right. communications. Commissioner.
I'm going to support the motion, but a couple of meetings ago at a work study, I asked a representative, I think it was of Verizon, about co-location, specifically with regard to the 5G technology, and she said there isn't going to be any because the technology just doesn't work with a competitor's antenna in the vicinity.
And I recall that testimony as well, and the testimony applies to small wireless facilities, not to towers. It's still very feasible to co-locate on a tower, just not on a utility pole or a light standard that's going to host a small wireless facility, 4G or 5G.
That was my understanding, too. She was talking about the small ones.
Yeah, the small ones.
Okay. So we have a motion. Did we have a
second? Any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by raising your hands. Opposed? Passes unanimously. So are there any other questions, comments? Commissioner Lennison.
Sorry, back to the notice again on page 8, the 800 feet, and I would like to suggest that we up that to about a quarter of a mile, considering the impact and the size of the projects. 1,200 feet notice to the neighbors would be an improvement over 800.
A motion?
Yes.
And I will second that.
Any further discussion?
Sorry, can you restate the motion?
Sure. So it would be, sorry, get my readers on. .030 permitting. Move to amend that section. This would be under subsection G notice. Subsection 2, mail notice to every property owner within 1,200 feet of the proposed facility. Current recommendation is 800.
All right. So it's been moved.
It's not exactly one quarter mile.
You said 1,000 feet instead of one quarter mile?
1,200. Oh, I'm all, but that's okay, too.
Do you want it to be 1,200 feet? Is that the number?
I'll ask a second.
Yeah, one quarter. That's fine. Second.
Okay. Works.
Okay. So we're leaving it as this or the 1,200 feet?
Okay.
1,200 feet. Discussion.
All right. Are we talking about the towers? Are we talking about the small wireless facilities? Because you're not going to need more than 800 feet for the small wireless.
Right. I was referring specifically to the towers.
So this would apply to administrative conditional use permits.
Correct.
And conditional use permits. The small wireless facilities that are new would require an ACUP as the code is written. So they would be required to have this notice.
The 1,200 feet?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Can we amend the motion to exclude small wireless facilities from this notice requirement?
Yeah, because the intent, I'd ask Congress recommendation too, but the intent is on the larger projects.
Can you move your microphone a little closer?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
The intent is to apply it to the larger projects, and as we noted, there asked a question earlier about the impact of staff time. It sounds like it's minimal, and we've already proposed in the code it's the applicant that's going to bear the cost of the postage. I think if you look at the size of the projects and the impact, and if you're going to go to the trouble anyway in some of these areas with balloon studies and that type of thing, I think more notice is appropriate. But I am willing to stipulate that be not applied to the smaller. So do you have any suggestions?
Excluding small wireless facilities.
One comment about this. I feel that the difference between 800 feet and 1,200 feet is arbitrary, and just you're picking a number out of the air. Well, I don't see where 800 feet.
If we were in, for example, in East Bremerton, in a high-dense area, obviously the number of parcels is a lot. But if you start getting into rural areas of Olala, Hansville, that type of thing, you'd be surprised when you go out 800 feet, you're really not hitting that many property owners. So the concept is to at least enlarge the radius to the point. And as I mentioned earlier, it's a separate code, but there's a reason. It was a policy decision with the siting of these types of homes that somebody along the way decided, well, the radius ought to be half a mile. Well, why shouldn't it be 50 feet? Why not 5 miles? I realize it may sound like it's out of the air, but my basis of it is a quarter mile is a reasonable expectation to provide notice to the neighboring properties based on the potential impacts of the projects we're talking about, the restrictions we're putting in, like a quarter mile. I mean, it's not that critical. Usually neighbors will talk to each other, although we're in a time politically nowadays where a lot of neighbors don't even know each other. You know, in the old days, I had to say it, everybody talked, and you could quickly find out. Siting the housing, look at the standing room only in Paulsville, so people will communicate. And then I'd ask you too, in a typical year, and this may be helpful, how many, I know you can't forecast the future, how many we may have, but in recent years, how many permits are requested? Not for the 5G, but in a typical year, how many cell tower applications do you get? And by the way, I think the map you provided was very, the visual map at the beginning of the process, very helpful.
The trend has gone down as far as the number of applications. We probably get about 2 to 3 a year. There's been a trend for like Crown Castle, American Tower, to they've been buying these towers up, and what they do is they've been extending or really packing them on there for to charge rent. But they're starting to plug holes as far as the RF, coverage in West Kitsap.
Okay.
More now.
Yeah, and Shelley mentioned too, I don't want to have it 2 or 3 sentences, but I also don't necessarily want to bifurcate because, again, in a high density area, 800 feet might be too much. It might be too far. But in particular rural areas out in Seabeck, in the central Kitsap district, in Hansville, and the Olala area, surprised how few parcels would actually be notified by the postcard within the 800 feet. So.
And
well, the other part of that is because I live in Olala, so because the parcels are large, the impact to how many neighbors are actually impacted by that, given the size of the parcels. You know, so if your radius is, you know, how many neighbors within a quarter of a mile will actually see the facility from their property?
That's a good point.
And I would also point out the terrain and the vegetation in the area of those areas you just talked about would preclude you seeing a tower more than 800 feet away.
Because I was just going to say, I travel a lot of easement roads, these 15-foot roads, et cetera, and it's surprising the things you can see. And especially with code enforcement, the number of complaints. This is being proactive, in my opinion, because everybody's gotten notice. The neighborhood knows about it. It's not one of these things where, after the fact, something's constructed and then the DCD gets to be the bad guys and gals because, well, nobody told me about it. And as we heard earlier, the costs, we're really talking about postage. I wouldn't propose it if the staff time were significant, but we've heard the staff time's really minimal to enlarge the footprint.
I would comment about the small towers will also be arrayed in groups. And my limited understanding of how far apart these small antennas are going to be is they must be within 250 feet of each other to go. So if you're stringing out a bit of a neighborhood, you have 5 or 10 permits. There's going to be more than 1,200 feet is not obsessive. It seems to me to include a whole lot that would be necessary anyway.
Well, and I guess I would come back to, you know, the small wireless facilities attached to an existing or replacement structure would be a letter of exemption, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so there would be no public notice requirement for that.
Correct.
For a small wireless facility, where, when would we find a small wireless facility needing an ACUP?
When it is a new structure. So, if you're erecting a new pole, a batch of new locations where a pole was not located.
Where a pole never was, correct. Not a replacement of an existing pole.
That's my understanding of it.
Okay, so, but it's still a pole. It's a utility pole height kind of pole,
yes.
Not a 65-foot or 100-foot tower kind of pole.
Correct. And there are a couple of options you can do with this. You can have a smaller radius for urban areas with a larger radius in the rural locations to account for those larger parcels. We can also look at moving this notice requirement to the tower section to where it's just for the large towers. For the 1,200 feet, keep the 800 feet for the ACUP. So we do have a couple of options you can consider. But with the conditional use permits, either the administrative or just to the hearing examiner, there is a notice requirement required by Title 21 to allow people to comment.
So, another question, Darren. When Puget Sound Energy comes in to put a new pole in, do they have to give notice to any of the neighbors if they're going to put a new pole in?
Not that I know.
Yeah. Yeah, my concern is that for small wireless facilities in the right-of-way, you're supposed to treat similar infrastructure pretty much the same and not make it more burdensome for them. So, I mean, if Puget Sound Energy can come and put a pole in without any process with the county, I guess I wondered what the thinking was on why it would be necessary for.
And that was a direct comment that we received and reviewed carefully. And the county interprets that to mean that it is other similar wireless infrastructure. It wasn't necessarily telephone poles and cable poles and other utilities. The language saying similar infrastructure to us referred to wireless facilities.
Well, I'm in favor of the larger radius for towers. You know, I agree with you. I'm fine with that. But I think that you know, if Puget Sound Energy can come put a new pole on a street and they don't have to give 800 feet worth of notice, that I don't know why we would require it for a small wireless pole.
And if you were to go that way, changing the permissibility to a letter of exemption is the easiest way in the draft to do something along that line.
Yeah, I would say, I guess if I had to choose between the two, urban versus rural, and then, as you mentioned, the small versus the large, I would go with the latter.
Yeah. So I would go with the larger. I would move that we adopt 1,200 feet. Is there a motion on the floor? I've lost. Yes. What is the motion?
I move the
1,200 feet. And I would move to amend that motion, make a friendly amendment, to exempt out small wireless facilities in the right-of-way, new poles for small wireless facilities in the right-of-way. New wireless facility support structures, how about, or poles? So I think that's the only thing that's subject to the notice requirement as written, as proposed by staff.
I'm sorry, I was still correcting to make sure it was small wireless facilities when you were talking.
New small wireless facilities support structures located in the right of way. So the amendment's been proposed. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Any discussion on the amendment? Vote on the amendment first. All those in favor of the amendment, signify by raising your hand. Opposed? And we have one opposition. Now to the main motion. Any further discussion on that? All right. Hearing none.
I have another typo. Another typo.
I'm sorry, Shelly.
I have another typo to
point out. Okay.
It's in the definition section.
Oh, we need to vote on this last motion first before we can move on.
Okay. We're back to the main.
So this is a motion to adopt this language as written in line 1 on page 8 of 26, lines 1 through 3, actually, that we're viewing on the screen. All those in favor, signify by raising your hand. Opposed? And it passes 5 to 1. have to count and see who's here. Okay, Commissioner Knight, moving on.
Okay, well, I have a couple of other things. I have a question that may be a stupid question. I missed the first few workshops. So on page 14, on the regulations for non-towers in the right-of-way, subsection 1B, I didn't know what clear zone meant and if it's a term of art or whether it's something out of the road standards.
That was, from my understanding, that was out of the road standards for a clear zone of visual line of sight.
Okay. I didn't know if it needed to be defined or because I didn't know what it meant. But if it's referencing, it does reference the road standards, so one may go there.
Okay, other questions?
And then I had the other typo on page definitions on antenna, page 20, the very last sentence, we have this title, CFR Title 35, which I think you cross out this Part 15, or just leave CFR. CFR Title 15 is not this title. This is Title 17. See what I'm saying? Authorized under.
I see.
Part 15 of CFR Title 15.
Okay.
And take out the parentheses.
Thank you, Dave. Is that what we're?
Strike of this title.
Oh, maintain that. I will get there.
You just need to get
if word corroborates.
Proper citation in there, and I don't know exactly what it is. I would move to amend 17.110.073 last sentence to take out the of this title and insert the proper CFR citation.
Second. Any further discussion on this motion? All those in favor, raise your hand and signify saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes unanimously. Other questions? Commissioner Eliason.
Page 9, experts. We don't have the application in front of us, but what commitment does an applicant make when they submit the application that they're agreeing to pay the experts? Is there any financial controls?
Jeff, do you have experience?
The reason I mention that reminds, I hate to pick on attorneys, but same thing, I would never, of course I'm finance industry, I would never sign an open a retainer agreement with legal counsel without a financial cap. So same thing, I'm looking, is there any type of limitation there?
Does the department generally enter into an agreement with the applicant when an outside expert's involved?
Give me just a moment to find out that answer.
That's great.
We have not, it's very rare we've had to use this requirement, but we have not entered into an agreement as far as when that's occurred.
Okay.
To limit the cost.
Okay.
Usually it's just the cost of reviewing the permit.
Glad to hear that. And that wouldn't be necessary anyway if what Shelley mentioned is the case, which would be a subsequent negotiation. Hey, you're at that point, we're going to need expert opinion. You know, there'd be some new, almost like some of the development agreements here, something new that's part of the project, and this is the approximate cost.
Yeah, generally the applicant will bear the cost of that permit. I'm sure that if it's exorbitant amount of money, the applicant will definitely protest.
Right. Great, thank you.
Are there other questions?
Just a point on the application. Of course, we're kind of flying in the dark here. We don't know how many facilities are coming forward. But does the industry have a model of what an application, a complete application, looks like for Kitsap County?
Not at this time. I mean, we have our existing application. We are currently in process of developing the application based on the code update. But until we get to a certain point where we have an expectation of what the code is going to be, it's kind of putting the cart before the horse if you start creating those permits too early.
The reason I ask is because the shot clock starts whenever the application is submitted. And if there's no guidelines, any old thing could qualify as an application. So I'm really concerned about that aspect of this operation.
And we actually do have, the last time that I looked, we had 4 permits in our system, one of which provided no supporting documentation, but technically that was an incomplete permit, but that does start the clock. And we have a certain amount of time to respond, to request the necessary information, and the applicant has a certain amount of time that they would need to get back to us for that. And that's currently based on the FCC standards, because our code is still in our course of being updated.
Other questions? I have one more correction, Darren, on page 5 of 26, the table. And if you look at a new non-tower facility on a structure not previously approved for facility use, I think paragraph 140 of the new FCC order clarified that I understand that does not include small cells as a new non-tower facility, but for a macro facility on a structure not previously approved for facility use, where was I going with that? Okay, I guess the question is, does that include small wireless facilities at any time?
No, because the item below that has small wireless facilities explicitly called out.
Okay, thank you.
For the 60-day letter of exemption.
Yep, got it. Okay, well, I think if there are no more questions or amendments, we come to kind of general deliberations.
What did we decide to do about the appeal section?
Well, and I would typically wait till the end of the discussion, but I continue to be troubled by the fact that there have been no stakeholder meetings. In other very technical codes, the agriculture code, sign code, I mean, things where there are a lot of stakeholders impacted by that, we have had staff outreach and meetings to talk about some of these technical challenges. We have pages of comment letters from folks in the industry that say that there are technical and feasibility challenges there. And you know, for me, the risk to the county is there if we don't do this right, if we write regulations that aren't feasible. And so I would rather take another bit of time and have the staff meet with the stakeholders in the interim and absorb that feedback and see if there are some additional technical corrections that, you know, that are needed. I think it would be, as always is, you know, if you can have the collaboration of the regulated in drafting regulations for, you know, I think it's helpful. And so I am disturbed by the fact that we haven't had the stakeholder outreach, and I think it wouldn't take a long time to put together a meeting to walk through these. And I also think it would be helpful to have the pole owners invited to this as well. CenturyLink owns some poles, Puget Sound Energy owns a lot of poles, and they have their own sets of requirements and standards for what they allow on their poles. That if you write a standard that's more restrictive than what they allow, then it puts the applicant in a position where, you know, who do you listen to? So it's been a helpful exercise, I think, in other codes that have come through that are technical in nature in the county, and certainly other jurisdictions are meeting with stakeholders to move through these very processes. So I would recommend that we table this until such time as staff can put together a stakeholder meeting to get that industry feedback and research the appeals question that Ms. Knipe had as well.
If I can talk to that for a moment.
And if I could, just a point of order, okay. If I remember Robert's rules right, isn't it the case if you, the maker of the motion to table is the only one that can bring it back to reconsider?
Well, then let me amend my motion to be a motion to bring this back at our next regularly scheduled Planning Commission meeting.
Okay.
That would be April 2nd, if I'm not mistaken, Amanda.
Do you have some comment on that?
I do. We definitely hear what you are saying. I would need to make sure and confirm that we are allowed under procedure to meet with stakeholders and to inform deliberations further. Technically, we are supposed to have public comment period, a public hearing, and not have any appearance of being biased in either way. So I would want to make sure that that is something that we could do.
Well, we could certainly reopen the public hearing if there are changes that, you know, that come about as a result of that stakeholder meeting, you know, to reopen the public hearing to the general public. I think that would cure your problem.
We would have to limit the scope of that to any of the responses have already been heard. I would urge the commission to keep in mind that this needs to be a transparent process for the public.
Understood.
And to entertain specific feedback from one group and not open up that possibility to others is traveling down a rough road.
The point about this is you talk about stakeholders. The biggest stakeholder that, in my mind, is the FCC that has pretty much laid down what the rules are and timelines for us. I don't know if how a stakeholder meeting is going to change any of that.
Well, and the FCC has said that, you're right, has limited the scope to aesthetic regulations. However, the way you write those regulations has a big impact on whether it's feasible to deploy under those regulations or you're prohibiting a deployment under those regulations. So there are technical challenges that I've read in the comment letters from the stakeholders from the wireless community that detail the technical challenges where the county might write a regulation that would effectively prohibit a carrier from deploying, which would expose the county to some risk if that happens. So I just wanted to, you know, let's take our time with it. We take another meeting to allow that interplay to happen, reopen the public hearing so that everybody can be heard on the new changes, if there are new changes brought forward, and be transparent about it.
Well, I remind the commission, I mean, this obviously is up to the commission to decide what its recommendation is going to be. I would remind you, however, that we did provide industry stakeholders an advanced draft of the ordinance. We received comment from them. We did adopt changes into the revision that is in front of you right now from that early draft, from their feedback. And then we also received subsequent comments, both written and oral, as part of the public process for this.
And on the effective prohibition business, if some carrier is effectively prohibited, I imagine that they will take Kitsap to court. And that would be a format where it could be decided. But as as we go forward, we can stick with these patterns and see what happens.
Well, you can. And what I'm concerned about is that very possibility. You know, that I don't think that's in the best interest of the community to be engaged in litigation necessarily with the water. So, if it's a matter of just, you know, having one more opportunity to sit down and be face to face and be able to draw the pictures of the technical challenges that they're facing and get on a whiteboard, that's the basis for my motion.
I would agree with you that a lot more information coming forward as to what is intended would be useful. We have seen pictures, but we don't know if that's it. You know, that I read someplace where one of the carriers said that we can't abide by this rule because the size of our antennas is different than the other guys. So, I don't know whose responsibility that is to make that communication available to Kitsap County prior to forcing us to make a code to accommodate it all.
Other comments?
We've heard quite a bit from representatives of, I believe, three providers, at least in this setting. But we haven't heard, and of course the staff, and then some concerned citizens. But I think my definition of stakeholders would be broader than just the providers. And like you say, the utility companies, some citizen groups. What we're really talking about, as I understand it, is primarily Silverdale and East Bremerton. I mean, this 5G isn't going to be extending into rural areas. But
well, the small wireless facilities well may.
So I support your motion.
Do we need a second?
I'll second your motion.
I thought we had one. I just want to make sure. Commissioner Eliason.
And I'm conflicted because earlier I mentioned that I thought there's great value. In fact, Kitsap County is, in my opinion, much better than other jurisdictions, including the cities in Kitsap, at stakeholder processes. I've been on that side of the table. I think it's been invaluable input into the staff, especially technical. One of the challenges I had coming here is besides being among esteemed colleagues, I thought I'm probably the worst person to have when it comes to technology. I don't know how many years my wife. Yeah, you remember the old flip phones where you had to hit the number 2-3 times to get the right letter? Well, I'm ashamed to admit it wasn't that long ago I got rid of that thing. So I've learned a lot through this whole process. But as Tom mentioned too, I think some of these things, and I caught that comment as well from one of the providers about the height of the tower, that would be helpful. But I think if I were in charge and this process started over, I would have had the stakeholder meetings right early at the beginning, and then they could have participated. I also agree with you in that, in my vision, the stakeholder groups have to be enlarged to include environmental groups, others as well. citizens, et cetera, utilities. But then I'm also concerned, too, that the staff's so far along in this process, and I don't know, they've got a timetable and all sorts of other projects they're doing and trying to get it to the Board of County Commissioners in a certain timeline, and want to make sure that we don't violate any procedures since this commission did close the public hearing process. So if we could find a way to navigate through all that, I'd be in favor of it. Madam Chairperson.
All right.
Commissioner Phillips.
I feel we're backing up because we're not really palatable with what we have here. I don't see any new information coming forward that's going to change any of this code. I think we've done a fairly good job of tailoring it to what we can do something about. Worrying about a future event, such as litigation or all that, unless you can point to something and say, that's what's going to sink the ship here, I don't agree with backing up the whole process, all the work that everybody's done, all the testimony, and then saying, because if we don't like it again, are we going to throw it back?
Understood. And for my part, the meeting with the stakeholders has generally been a part of the process. And I think it's an important process when you have a very technical code. If we were amending the building code or doing a stormwater update, you know, those folks would be at the table to talk about the nuts and bolts and logistics. And that conversation hasn't happened yet as to identifying what is that bullet that's going to sink the ship.
I don't think we have, I don't think that the, on the stakeholder meetings you're discussing, agricultural code and all that, the county had full control over those processes. This wireless process, we don't have full control. We have a very limited and narrow defined area that we can exert any control over. So as far as getting one of these larger stakeholder meetings going and saying, yeah, we're going to get something different, I don't think you're going to get it.
Other views?
If I might add one piece, we did anticipate having a meeting after Planning Commission had completed their process before we started the board process. And so there was another opportunity to meet prior to that, as well as the opportunity to provide public comment at the board public process level.
Okay. Now, we're the hearing body, though, for the board on this ordinance. So wouldn't it have to come back to us if you had a stakeholder meeting and made changes? It would end up back here anyway, wouldn't it?
It would depend on the nature of the changes. If it was a large change to the code, then it may require coming back for public process to come back through Planning Commission.
And procedurally, this Planning Commission makes its recommendation to the department, and then the department carries the ordinance to the board. And there can be changes between the draft that this body reviews and the draft that goes to the board.
But hasn't the tradition be if there's a difference between the opinion of the staff and the Planning Commission, you submit both to the commission?
That is correct.
Okay. And procedurally, if we could, in my mind, navigate through the legal aspects of it, too, and the calendar challenges, not necessarily create a significant challenge for the staff and the timeline of advancing this to the county commissioner, I see there could be value in having the stakeholders group. It would be useful information to me because I'm interested in outcomes. I mean, we got to have all these details, but I want to know once this hits the street, a lot's going to depend on how this affects the providers and the community and all the stakeholders. So obviously with a stakeholders process, if it were in the beginning, you have buy-in in it. I mean, no commission would like that better than to have all the groups sitting here in the audience and everybody in agreement with what it should be, correct? But as you noted in the written testimony, and that's one thing I found consistent, at least from the providers, is there was a lot of concern about the procedures. Now, how much of that, this is not my expertise, and that's what I'd like to know, how much is required of the FCC, and then how much is our local interpretation of what we want to put into this code. So how much of a disruption would it be to, or maybe my first response is to the interim director, if a majority of this commission said, sorry, a majority of us are not comfortable adopting this tonight, what would you recommend the next step be? Could that include a stakeholder process? What challenges are there to it?
So Jim Bolger, Department of Community Development. I think if we were to go back and kind of postpone a decision of the Planning Commission on this proposal right now, we could hold an additional stakeholder meeting, but we would pretty much be limited to the comments that have been received to date. We wouldn't be taking any further consideration of new information that they might provide because of some of the points that Dave Ward provided earlier. I think the alternative would be if you were to make a recommendation based on the proposal that's in front of you and the amendments you've made to the overarching motion tonight, and direct the department to communicate that to the board, we could go out and have stakeholder meetings. If we came out with a draft that was wholly different than what you all had to consider, certainly a recommendation to the board to remand it back to the Planning Commission for further consideration is also an option. So that if we went too far afield of what you all are considering at this time, I don't think that the board would have any problem in remanding it back for your further consideration. So it's kind of like, you know, we can't reopen the record now with stakeholder meetings after we've gone through this level of process. I think that could be problematic. But we certainly have a new record to establish as we take this forward to the board, and then they have some options in front of them. I'm sensing questions.
Take charge.
All right, so we have a motion on the floor right now to to delay to our next meeting, and for you to direct you to have a stakeholder meeting in between.
There wasn't a second, correct?
There was. We've heard another alternative to this. I guess my question before I deal with the motion, I have a question for Mr. Bolger. Is that is if you do hear relevant, you know, if you do go through those comments and make some changes, is there a vehicle for us to see what you've done? You know, how would that be communicated to us?
As we take it through the board process, if we go out with those stakeholders?
Yeah.
There wouldn't be we could certainly report back out to the Planning Commission as we have in other processes as we go from the Planning Commission to the board. We've talked about where the board is at, what their consideration for those proposals as they move through the legislative process. We can certainly commit to providing that input, and you as individuals can provide comment to the Board of County Commissioners through their consideration as well. So, I mean, there are opportunities to do that. I think also if you move it outside of the deliberations of this body at this point and move it into that kind of legislative process that the board will be going through, we kind of open up the record again. So if there is additional information that can cast light on some of the comments that we've already considered from the industry, for example, that new information can be introduced during that process, which I would be a little apprehensive of allowing that now because we have closed kind of the public comment period for the Planning Commission's consideration.
However, as you suggested, what's the impact if the commission decides to reopen the comment period?
The board will, the Planning Commission, reopens it?
If we reopen the comment period on the issues that arise from the stakeholder meeting.
So we would have the stakeholder meeting and then we would potentially reopen the public comment period, or open the public comment period and then have the stakeholder meetings, which would include.
Well, staff expressed concern about just reopening the record completely for everything. So,
right.
So I think my suggestion would be to reopen the record for purposes of going over the existing comments with the stakeholders.
Sure.
And then, and any response?
I would think we would have to do some noticing associated with that if we were going to reopen it, now that we've officially closed it, to notify members of the public who have commented that they would have to do that. So there would be a delay, a significant delay in the process. And then it would really just be oral testimony. And then we would probably have to hold a series of meetings around the county, I would imagine, if we really want to reach out, not just to industry, but for other potential stakeholders. I mean, when you look at the list on the comments, there were people that expressed a variety of concerns over, you know, expanded wireless communications, not just on the placement of these facilities. But so there would be some process associated with kind of reopening the for consideration.
Comments?
Question about this. What is there an item that you feel that is going to come out of a stakeholders meeting that we have not considered?
Yes. I think that the stakeholders, if you read their comment letters, have identified very specific technical challenges that they have in are anticipating in the ordinance as applied. I read the staff comment matrix, and I don't see that all of those concerns have been addressed. So my concern is, my hope is that they can get together face to face and walk through. Sometimes when you're dealing with mm-hmm. a technical code, it's helpful to be able to whiteboard something out or to actually see the picture of what the problem is,
and
have that conversation. So I'm not suggesting that, you know, we throw the shop door open again, but I think that another go at the technical challenges that have been identified.
Sure. We also have the opportunity to create a minority report, as it were, for this decision, or a minority opinion, and we will move that forward to the board as well, so that they're sensitive to any concerns that may have come out of the Planning Commission's consideration.
Well, and the other point, as Mr. Bolger points out, this is not the final decision. This is a recommendation. The Board of Commissioners is the final word and will establish that. I think if there is holes in this code because of not hearing from the stakeholders, then we should recommend that be done. Starting over again, I feel, is we're creating a problem here of not following our own rules.
I have concerns about starting over again, too. We're so far down the process here, and there will be more opportunity before the board for public input. I like Mr. Bolger's idea of a report back to the Planning Commission.
Mm-hmm. Well, based on Mr. Bolger's suggestions and the feedback from the Commission, I withdraw my motion to delay this to a date certain and would entertain a motion from my fellow commissioners to move this forward as amended.
I will move that we move this proposal forward as amended and place for a vote.
Is there a second?
For purposes of discussion, I'll second that motion. I would suggest that perhaps some additional language be added that encouraging input. More input from stakeholders before this gets presented to the board, or something to that effect. Because I still have some some concerns, is that a reasonable alternative to add some language about getting more input or suggesting that more input be obtained from stakeholders before the board?
Kind of capturing what Mr. Bolger said.
Yes, we can include that in the findings as a recommendation from the Planning Commission
to conduct a stakeholder meeting prior to board public process.
And to report back at our next scheduled meeting after the
stakeholders. We can include that in the findings as part of your recommendation.
And if we move this forward, I'm still unclear about the section on appeal and how we're handling that. Are we going to re-deliberate on that at the next meeting, or are we just...
On the appeal issue?
On the appeal section. Because I don't even remember now if there was a motion made on that. Or not.
There was...
No.
Right. I thought there was a motion. I will defer to the clerk on
there,
that.
There is no completed motion. I would have had that recorded through showing it in the red lines here because it was going to be cut down to right at the end of appealed. That was what your discussion revolved around.
Well, I think there was also a further discussion on whether or not ACUP should be exempt from appeals.
And you do have the ability to change it to still allow for appeals. Again, the language around whether an appeal counts towards that shot clock, we interpret to be, it could almost go either way. So we were trying to be safe with this. But that is not something that is absolutely clear in the language.
Appeal shall toll the time.
Make but it whether the appeal is included in the shot clock or not, the ambiguous portion is in the FCC language.
I understand so. That.
Yeah. Federal law will ultimately determine that, I guess.
Right.
Right, but if it's ambiguous.
We have the underlying motion. I'd suggest you make a motion to amend that so we can still pass amendments prior to voting the underlying motion.
Sure.
You have a motion?
To amend this?
Yes.
No, not yet. we talked about doing more research.
Yeah.
On
all right. Is there a motion to amend this section?
Not for me.
No? Okay. Back to the main motion. All those in favor?
Just point of order. Did the maker of the motion agree to add the language about the stakeholder? That wasn't part of the original motion. We just kind of discussed it, but the commissioner didn't necessarily agree.
I have a general comment, and it goes for all uses of the word stakeholder. In this case, we are talking about the carriers and the interested parties. No, we're not talking about folks. I mean, this comes up in many, many situations where the people who are considered stakeholders are just folks who have an economic interest in the outcome. But I would like to just, instead of use the word stakeholders, if we mean carriers, let's use that word.
Sure. But it's not just carriers, it's utility companies. I guess the county's already provided its input, but a lot of these things are going to be hung on power poles and light poles and that kind of stuff, and I don't think we've seen a lot of direct input in that regard. And from what I'm hearing, there's going to be maybe half a dozen different providers hanging these cans all over everything in sight on the streets, and we haven't heard much from the folks that own these poles and structures that they're going to be hanging those. Stakeholders as well.
We had the Public Works representative here that basically stated that they've already agreed that if it's in the right of way, that they can be placed there.
Yeah, but they don't control the poles. They're in the right of way, but they're owned by the power company and the utility. Commissioner Nevin's point. I agree with you, and my expectation would be if we go that direction, that I'm anybody and everybody who wants to, other than for legal issues. If you went the other direction, you know, you
you'd have to limit it to the testimony that's already been provided. But a solution to that, too, and the alternative, is just to encourage people to attend the Board of County Commissioners meeting. Because as you mentioned, that's where the final decision is going to be made anyway. But I would be in favor, because we're obviously transmitting our recommendation to commissioners, and you expressed, and I know I did as well, I would have liked to have seen a stakeholder process, but maybe in the motion, at least the motion in the effect would say, we're adopting it, but we think there's value to having more input.
Yeah, that we think that the board should have the input, additional input from.
Yeah, it doesn't have to necessarily be the word stakeholder, because I agree with the commissioner.
From the industry and the infrastructure owners. Other comments?
So is the motion industry what you described, or are we going to go with the broader version? Was yours including but not limited to? Or was
including
yours...
but not limited okay. to the wireless industry, the infrastructure owners, and the infrastructure owners, and other interested parties.
So I would request that I have time to do the findings of fact after this meeting occurs to make sure that we get the language correct on that and time for you to review it properly.
Okay. So is the motion that's on the table is to recommend that the board approve the code as amended based on the findings that we've directed staff to prepare. Is that your motion, Commissioner Nivens?
Yes.
All right. Is there a second?
A second.
And that was Commissioner Svensson, not Commissioner Nivens. Is there a second?
A second.
Okay. Commissioner Knight. All right. Any further discussion? All right. All those in favor of the motion, signify by raising your hand. Opposed? Passes unanimously.
Do the findings of procedural issue, do the findings of fact have to come back to the commission, or could we authorize the chairperson to execute it on behalf of the commission?
I believe it has to come back to the commission.
Okay.
Yes. Yep. We did provide those just in case there was a quick session. It was not likely, but yes, now we have those in advance. You have them well in advance, so you can review those, and we'll provide some modifications based on tonight's meeting.
Okay. So that'll come before the next meeting, then, to adopt
yes.
this? Okay.
Yes.
All right. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to all of the staff for walking us through a very technical evening.
Well, thank you for your patience.
All right. With that, we will move to item G, 2018 Planning Commission Annual Report. Mr. Ward.
Well, hopefully this one won't take quite as long. It's report time, so you should have in your packets a draft version prepared by the department for the 2018 annual report to the board. As you may recall from last year, and for those of you who weren't on the commission last year, this is an annual report to the board of the activities of the commission. Which once this draft is approved by the Planning Commission, the Commission will then have a subsequent meeting with the board to sit down, talk through any issues, any highlights, any thoughts or recommendations that you might have for the Board of County Commissioners. So I'm happy to take any edits or changes or recommendations that you might have for this draft document, and hopefully we can get through this tonight.
Are there?
I'm afraid I didn't review it. I don't.
When was that sent out?
I must have missed it somewhere. I don't see it in the Dropbox list.
Nope. I didn't see it at all.
Yeah, we can consider it at our next meeting if you didn't receive the copies. I thought we did send it out.
No.
No.
And also it's not online. It's not in the online packet.
Okay. In that case, let's just defer this to the next meeting and we'll move on.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. That does it for item G. Moving on to item H, Mr. Bulger, administrative updates.
So we'll keep this short. Welcome, Commissioner Eliason. It's good to see you at the podium at the DS. Really short, we've been told by Human Resources that the board hopes to make a decision for the department by the end of month. So hopefully by April or sometime in there, we'll have a new permanent director for the department as we go forward. I did want to mention that last week we did hold an affordable housing short course. Department of Commerce came in. A number of you came to that program. I thought it was received very well. That is available on BCAT. They just released the videotape today. I'll have Amanda send out a link if anybody would like to view that moving forward. There were a lot of interesting tools and things like that that were discussed. And I think this will be the beginning of a kind of a broader conversation about what we can be doing better in Kitsap County in terms of trying to address some of the affordable housing issues. And some of that may even be code-based, which you'll get a chance to see down the road. So if there aren't any questions, I will let you get on to the most important part of your agenda. And I think that may be good of the order and adjournment.
Thank you, Mr. Bulger. Are there any questions? All right, hearing none, on to item I for the good of the order. I just want to say thank you for working through a really difficult, complex piece of work tonight and the previous meetings. I think the discussion was robust and very helpful to me personally. And so thank you, everyone, for being prepared and having great questions. Is there anything else? With that, we will adjourn. Where's my stapler?